The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Behind people, you can pull yourself into the middle more if you would like to. Just get up and slide your zabaton. Yes, I'm talking to you. Yeah, so we can see each other. Yeah, it's fine. Just you can use that whole area there. Good morning, and thanks for springing forward. We're still doing that. So today I wanted to, we're in Anga, which is a 90-day training intensive. Those of you that are new, goes back to the time of the Buddha, where it's a time where we really increase our contact with the Dharma. And we're studying the Eight Gates of Zen, which is a training matrix based on the Eightfold Path of the Buddha that my first teacher, Daito Roshi, set up as a way of training students in the Buddha Dharma. Since when he created that, it was fairly new to this country. There weren't many resources. There was no internet, not many books. So he put together this way of that we could train. So if you're reading it, you might see some things are outdated or different now. So it's just interesting to look at. And one of the gates of training is art practice. And the residents are reading for, we chose for our academic study that we do once a week here to read together the Zen of Creativity written by Daito Roshi. So I don't know, this talk is something about the creative spirit, that we are creative beings, that we're constantly creating. It's not just making things like paintings or sculptures, though that's a part of creation and a valuable part and brings immense joy and goodness to us. But what are we creating? What do we stop creating? We're a part of a vast web of interconnectedness. And we keep hearing this in the training that from the Avatamsaka Sutra, just the diamond net of Indra, that we're all intimately connected. That's how vast we are. And this web isn't all tangled up. Some people think of like a fishing net all like wound up. No, it's a vast functioning, pulsating creativity. And so, we are always creating, always communicating. And part of what practice is about is becoming conscious and aware of what we are doing and what is our intention, what's that emerging from. And as a practitioner of peace, as a bodhisattva, we want to practice good, create good. And we do see in one moment, from the moment you woke up till breakfast, we can be in any realm. We can create any realm. We can be in hell in a moment. We can be in heaven. We can be an animal. We can be a hungry spirit. So we're training to bring the whole being into awareness to recognize our creations. So he starts off the book. Creativity is our birthright. It's an integral part of being human, as basic as walking, talking, and thinking. Throughout our evolution as a species, it has sparked innovations in science, beauty in the arts, and revelation in religion. Every human life contains its seeds and is constantly manifesting it, whether we're building a sandcastle, preparing Sunday dinner, painting a canvas, walking through the woods, programming a computer, interacting in the subway. The creative process, like a spiritual journey, is intuitive, non-linear, and experiential. It points us towards our essential nature, which is a reflection of the boundless creativity of the universe. Zen Buddhism, and particularly the Zen arts, are a rich source of teachings to help us understand and help us cultivate our creativity. And as we know, Buddhism traces its history back to Shakyamuni Buddha, who lived over 2,500 years ago in India. And the Buddha spoke upon his own enlightenment and saw that each and every being, as well as the great earth itself, is perfect and complete, lacking nothing. He pointed out that our idea of a separate, limited self is a painful delusion. That's that interconnectedness, right? So everything we think, do with our mind, with our body, with our actions, body, speech, has an effect. Sometimes we don't think about that with our thoughts. No, they're in me. Like, that doesn't go anywhere. Wonder. He says, the self is empty of any intrinsic characteristics. So what kind of expression comes out of that realization? All the Buddhist teachings are skillful means to help people discover these truths for themselves. And then in the 6th century, there was a monk named Bodhidharma. Some of you might see him. He's often depicted kind of growly and grumpy in his these paintings of him. He said he doesn't have eyelashes because it's said he, to stay awake, he pulled them out and then threw them to the ground, and they became the first tea plants. I don't know how true that is. That's in the legend. But he considered to be the first ancestor in the Chinese lineage of the Zen lineage. He came from India to China, so this is 6th century CE. And he defined Zen by 4 points. He said Zen is a special transmission outside the scriptures. So it's not anything we read or find in books. It doesn't rely on words and letters. A direct pointing to the human mind, direct pointing, and the realization of enlightenment. So the Zen arts are a form of that direct pointing. So what is this direct experience? What is direct experience, direct pointing? D.T. Suzuki said, experiencing reality directly without relying on concepts, beliefs, or external interpretations, a state of immediate, unmediated awareness. Direct. Smells good. That's even extra. Right? It's cold. That's extra. Just very direct. So we've all had these unexpected, unsuspected moments of just simple presence where our heart and mind just relaxes for a moment. There's a gap in our continuous thinking about things and doing things to things, but there's a gap where we relax and there's a simple presence with things and there's a direct experience. That happens a lot in nature before we say, oh, how beautiful. But when we just encounter it, it's like, oh, right? For anything, before the mind moves, maybe for a moment, and we just dissolve for a moment with a boundless heart and mind. It could even happen with a person where that seemingly separate, solid sense, static sense of self turns into kind of a healthy emptiness for a moment, just a healthy emptiness, not filled within ourself. And in this regard, I was thinking about one of the first practice instructions on Zazen I heard from Daito Roshi, where he said, stop attaching. I mean, stop creating as a creative. He said, stop creating by attaching. And it was interesting because this week, Kian, one of the monastics, sent Daito had this rant that he did during an introduction to Zen training about Zazen. And it's 23 seconds, and Kian found it, and he sent it to me. So I'm going to read you Daito's little rant that he did it. And some of you might be going, uh-huh, I remember that. It's the same thing every time. The first and most fundamental of the eight gates of training is Zazen, and some of you just received instructions in this. Don't confuse Zazen with meditation. Don't confuse it with mindfulness or mindlessness or focusing the mind or quieting the mind or concentration. Zazen is not meditation. Zazen is a way of using your mind, a way of living your life, and it's a way of doing those things with other people. And at the same time, there is no rule book to go by. You have to go deep into yourself to find the foundations of it. Zazen brings us home constantly to the moment, to stop creating and directly experience. But that's the first step of what Zazen is about. It does not take place on the cushion. Ultimately, it must manifest in everything that we do. It is our very life itself. And step by step, as our practice deepens and we travel through the stages of training, that Zazen evolves into a whole way of living your life and using your mind. So, in Zazen, the goal isn't to stop the thoughts that arise, create a blank mind, but rather to observe, see, without judgment or attachment, returning to the present moment with the breath as an anchor, and using counting, sometimes breaths, to lead the way. So we know where to return, and we can just see what's happening. We're not forcing the mind to be empty or still. Thoughts and sensations naturally arise. The focus is on observing thoughts and emotions as they arise and pass, without getting caught up in them or judging. Right? That's the stop creating. So once we attach and keep going with it, we're creating more and more. More. In the tradition, it's called papanka. I love that one. Just rolls off your tongue. It means proliferation. We proliferate. We make it go and go, and we create more and more when it just simply has arisen, and we see that, and we let it be. Later, we can take something up. And then we embody the body, this mountain posture. So integral to calming the body, to quieting the mind. Because sometimes the body doesn't say anything about us. It's not judgmental. Did you ever hear your body like it may do things, but it doesn't talk and say like things about us. It's just our body, right? So together, when they start coming together, that can be a big support, because we realize our mind is going all over, creating all over, but our body is stable. It's okay. It's here. It's in its mountain posture. So in Zazen, we stop imposing ourselves on the world. And this happens with the attachment to our habitual thinking. Just going over things again and again, creating again. Stop creating. So I've come to feel this stop creating, Daito Roshi speak of, is to leave the mind in its natural state. That's what it does. A brain, if you call it. Just in its natural state. Don't do anything. When thoughts and sensations arise, just let them arise. And then we just reconnect with our breath. I know that's something there, right? But just find your breath again. Just let it dissolve. And when they fall away, just let it fall away. Try not to manipulate. And at times we kind of fall through. These appearances that keep coming. We just fall through it. We fall through ourselves, the usual habitual selves. There's a gap. We fall through. We just see it for what it is, how we keep creating. Buddha invited us to come see beyond this notion of a self. So, in the gate of art practice, we're this ongo. Let's see, I got all kinds of notes here. Yeah, we're working with, since all things are impermanent, in a constant state of change, as it is, appears as something constantly new and different moment to moment. So because there's nothing fixed, or there's this great basis of underlying emptiness, things can arise as anything whatsoever. And they have a duration, an amount of time that they'll stay. Like this has been around for a while, but it's going. But it seems like it's not. This stand, this floor, this building, everything is changing. And so that can be for a long duration or a very short duration. Sometimes we see impermanence very quickly. Just watch a cloud. It'll just show us impermanence very quickly. So in our art practice, we're choosing something we can see its changing nature clearly, like an apple. Or a leaf, or a flower petal, or a flower. And that's our teacher for 90 days. You just stay with that one thing, and you make a connection with it, and you just express in some medium, painting, drawing, movement, singing, however you want to. And of course, you run into the same things you run into in Zazen. With this one thing, you see everything. You see the whole reality in this one thing. All-inclusive study. There's a Evelyn Underhill, who's a Christian mystic, speaks of the mystic's way of perceiving. And she says, look for a little time in a special and undivided manner at some simple, concrete and external thing. This object of our contemplation may be almost anything we please, a tree, a plant, an apple, a distant hillside, a growing plant, running water, little living things. Look then at this thing you have chosen, and willfully, yet tranquilly, refuse the messages which countless other aspects of the world are sending. And so concentrate your whole attention to this one act of loving sight. And that's the only thing that's sort of in your conscious field. Do not think, but as it were, pour out your personality towards it. Let your soul be in your eyes. Almost at once, this new method of perception will reveal unsuspected qualities in the external world. So if you can follow that, you're with your apple, but you don't know its name. So you're just like there with this intimate, with this living thing, right? Before we put things on it. And you just let it teach you. And, you know, from the outside, everyone's going to, you're going to, when she says ignore the messages which countless other aspects of the world are sending, think about that in our life. All the messages that were sent that we think we should be, how we should be. An apple's red, sky is blue. No, Giacometti says it's lavender. Don't think, as it were, but just pour out towards it and see what happens. I love this. What Dido gave us, many of you know this assignment many years ago, and I worked with a potato for 90 days. Did you ever live with close to a potato, one potato for 90 days? You have to be surprised what's going to happen. You just have to meet it, keep meeting it, just like the person you live with. You know, we can just get like into this habituation, but we forget this is a living creation we're in, and we're putting this right now together. And that's how it is with our partners, with anyone we meet. We're always putting it together, we're creating it. So how do we get that freshness, that meeting that thing anew as our teacher? She says, an intensified, I don't want to say what she says here because I don't like that she's telling me what I'm supposed to feel, but anyway. It seems as though the barrier between its life and your own, between subject and object, has melted away. You are merged with it in an act of true communion. And you know the secret of its being deeply and unforgettably. Who are we talking about? We're merged. So whose life, secret life, are we learning about deeply and unforgettably? Don't go further than the tip of your nose. Yeah. Elizabeth Bishop said, what one seems to want in art, in experiencing it, is the same thing that is necessary for its creation, a self-forgetful, perfectly useless concentration. Interconnectedness, this mutual arising interdependence. I remembered one time Robert Thurman spoke about this, and the Buddha speaking about this in a very unusual way, and I found it. And it's kind of goes along with one of our students' writings, Kay Larson. And so she writes, the great chain of interdependence and mutual arising posited by the Buddha and elaborated in the mystical visions of the Avatamsaka Sutra, which characterize the seamlessness and wholeness of life and art perfectly joined, the art of living perfectly joined, never separate for a millisecond. Hierarchies dismantled, their power dispersed, never separate. Effortlessly healed. Action that extends throughout time and space like the Buddha, and as an expression of the mind's inherent freedom. She writes, the mind ground as the seedbed of creativity, the tree that speaks of truths without end, unboundedness glimpsed in its absolute aspect. So the setting for the Avatamsaka Sutra is mind's dawn, and the Buddha's just awakened, as I said before, from his dark night of meditation, a night made dark by his clinging to his fixed views that he held about himself and the limits of his mind. That's why it's dark. And now, through the power of his meditation, he penetrated the veils of the self one by one by one until he has passed through the seeming solidity of Siddhartha Gautama. And as he lets go of the subjective and contingent aspects of his own being, he enters the realm of boundlessness beyond words, a mystic realization of harmonic unity and identity, just like we chanted this morning. And he looks up in the clear light of his Buddha nature and he sees the morning star. Boom. And here is Robert Thurman, how he rephrases the Buddha's post-enlightenment dilemma after he realizes himself. Now, you have to understand Robert Thurman has a lot of sense of humor as he's teaching Buddhism, so I really appreciate this. Say you are the Buddha, and you're free of suffering, and you're totally great. As happy as a clam, as happy as a bee, and at one with the universe. And then you see all these miserable people. Yet what would you do? What would it do you for you to go give them a big grin and a big hug or smother them with joyfulness? They'll just get freaked out and paranoid and say, what does this person want? So instead, a Buddha has to develop some strategies, some art, to first of all open the person's imagination to the fact that there is a world where they don't have to be miserable all the time. And then he has to help them with a method of how to move from their paranoid corner of misery into the great ocean of bliss of the universe that you, as a Buddha, perceive. So the Buddha becomes the world's first performance artist. And he takes on roles intuitively chosen to convey an experience that is more the sum of words that anyone could say about it. He's got to do something different. He can act freely because he set himself aside. He has pierced through those veils, those illusions, not only of selflessness, but the illusion of that solid, substantial, historically determined me concocted from my conditioning, your conditioning. He's seen his essential nature as a mirage of the mind. And he's not entered any unusual or extraordinary or otherworldly state. He has simply let go of his encumbrance. That's what we're practicing. What's in the way? And art practice shows us that. I mean, how many of us has so much around art, you know, and making a mark or a movement, right? It's just, we're loaded. So it's a perfect training gate to set ourselves free. So now the Buddha's free to meet others where they stand and adopt whatever tactics are most effective to liberate people. And that's what we try and find with who we're dealing with. As much as we know, we keep trying to find those ways to be liberate. If we feel it, then we can do it for another person. And here's Thurman again. The point is, in terms of art, when we go into the magical aspect of the Buddha, you look at the lifetime of the Buddha and see how every breath that the Buddha draws, every gesture the Buddha makes, every word the Buddha speaks is an artistic manifestation in the sense that none of it is driven by any sort of selfish impulse on the part of the being that was formerly Siddhartha Gautama. Everything he does is a communication of compassion to other beings, creating doorways to open up their imaginations and then their whole being to enlightenment, to nirvana, to peace, to being at peace. You have to present peace first as a work of art And that allows people to perceive it. And it opens up the possibility that they can experience for themselves. So we treat ourselves as a work of art. And we work on this work of art to find peace, to create peace. And people will perceive it. And that opens the possibility that they can experience it directly for themselves. This is something we can create. This is our art as a human being. Who would want to seek nirvana if they couldn't imagine that such a state of freedom, that there is such a state of freedom from suffering? Kay writes, do I take the cue from the Buddha and regard my life as a work of performance art that conveys intimately and decisively the state of my awareness and the condition of my compassion? Can I act when need be? And if not, what gets in the way? The Buddha is an artist because he has penetrated the veils of self, because he has tapped the enormous creative resources of his Buddha nature, and thus is free of mental encumbrances. No hindrance in the mind, therefore no fear, promises the Heart Sutra. The Buddha at his awakening saw that all beings have the Buddha nature, perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Doesn't mean we don't need a little work, as Suzuki says. Perfect and complete, lacking nothing, and we all could use a little work. Thus, we are all artists expressing our true nature fully through the ongoing minute-by-minute activity of composing our lives out of the flux, out of the floating world. Some of us may realize it, and some of us may not. And some of us may create art consciously, while others do not. But realization, or lack of it, doesn't change reality one bit. There's an artist in each of us, and that's Buddhism's great contribution about human creativity. We are deeply connected and affected by others creating. I listened to Shugen Roshi's talk on Ango opening, and he said, I like this comment, he says, don't put the handle of creation in someone else's hands. Create the cause and conditions that give rise to good karmic roots. This we can do. We can give rise to creating the good causes that create good karmic roots. And part of Sangha's work is to create that together. And then you take that to your many other Sanghas, your family, your work, your ride on the subway. We're constantly making art. It's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/zcnyc.